The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Back in the 1990s, a German bank called Deutsche Bank wanted to stick a tentacle into our great American money machine. Now, at that time, this meant that they needed to start providing loans to people that the already established American banks would rather not deal with. Which, at that time, happened to include Donald Trump. Now, since our president has always had a habit of not paying back his loans, he also has a habit of not paying his workers or his subcontractors, for that matter, especially the undocumented ones. But anyway, Deutsche Bank decided to step up to the plate and they started loaning money to Donald Trump. However, Deutsche Bank insisted upon certain guarantees. Now, usually, when he took out a loan, the rump would create some largely or wholly sham corporation and then use that corporation to actually acquire the loan, so that rather than Donald Trump, the sham corporation would be the entity held responsible when the loan defaulted. Even though by that time, all the assets from the sham corporation had usually long ago been transferred into one of Donald Trump's personal accounts. Well, tough luck for creditors. The rump would probably call doing things like that smart. However, Deutsche Bank insisted upon including provisions wherein, rather than whatever sham corporation the rump had set up to be held responsible for the loan, the rump's own personal wealth would also be subject to seizure in case of default. Well, it appears that the rump currently owes Deutsche Bank over $300 million. And it appears that he is going to default on that loan. Bada boom. So this leaves Deutsche Bank with several choices, all of which are very incredibly bad. Do they seize Mar-a-Lago? Really? Can you imagine the tweets that would start emanating from the White House were they to try to do that? They're going to default on the same president that runs a government with the power to audit Deutsche Bank's books. However, if they don't ding our president for the money that he owes them, then that opens up several legal cans of worms concerning gifts to the president and or campaign finance laws and or just incredibly crappy optics in any case, no matter what they do. Maybe we should cry Deutsche Bank a river. Or maybe not. Since many people seem to have rusty irony detectors, I should probably point out that Deutsche Bank is actually one of the almost stereotypical criminal enterprises that simply masquerade as a bank. Yes, Deutsche Bank does do a lot of legitimate banking, and Deutsche Bank isn't quite as blatant or as outrageous as other more famous criminal banking enterprises, such as Nugent Hand or BCCI, for an example. But interestingly, in the context of Donald Trump, rather than laundering CIA drug money, Deutsche Bank instead mostly launders Russian mafia money. But Deutsche Bank is run exactly on the same idea as Nugent Hand and BCCI, and Deutsche Bank uses exactly the same methods to achieve their nefarious ends as those more famous examples did. The only reason to cry Deutsche Bank a river would be if we could wash them away with it. Ah, yes. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for February 7th, 2020. Let's start off this week's show by talking about insanity. If you don't think that cultural conditioning has a profound influence upon our worldviews, well, consider that even people who commit insanely outrageous acts that seem to be going completely off the charts and utterly rejecting their cultural conditioning, even people such as this tend to go off the rails.
Lately things just don't seem the same.
In a culturally prescribed manner.
Acting funny, and I don't know why.
In our culture, for instance.
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Someone who goes off the deep end is likely to pick up an assault weapon and go kill a bunch of innocent people. Whereas amongst the Algonquin tribes,
don't know if I'm going up or down.
Of Native Americans, people who went crazy would often develop a craving to consume human flesh.
Whatever it is, it's put a spell on me.
This phenomenon even has a name. It is called the Wendigo psychosis. Now, in some Inuit cultures, someone who slipped over the edge is likely go running naked across the snow fields. Now, Americans,
purple haze,
rarely
all in my eyes,
eat human flesh or run naked across snow fields. Whereas Algonquins rarely commit mass murder,
got me blowing,
or run naked across snow fields. Whereas Inuits,
is it tomorrow,
rarely commit mass murder,
or just the end of time,
or eat human flesh. So it seems to me that whatever methods are used in such conditioning, conscious or otherwise, could also be used to condition for good or desirable things.
Purple haze, all in my mind.
If it's gonna happen anyway,
is it tomorrow? Or just the end of time?
Then why not check it out? So I just listened to an interview with a journalist who claims that studies have proven that people are really lousy lie detectors. Actually, I already knew this. From endless anecdotal evidence I have been seeing for my entire life. And I also know this because I happen to be an exception to that rule, in that with notable exceptions, I can often tell when people are lying to me, and I have often noted most other people's seeming inabilities in this area. Evidently, there is survival value in trusting people, since so many people tend to do so. But the fact also remains that people's inability to detect lies also plays right into the hands of the fascists. However innocently, I'm not lying, believe me. Fortunately, there has been so much overwhelming evidence that has surfaced lately that by this point, nearly everyone understands that the government constantly lies to us nearly all the time. Indeed, this was one of the many reasons why the rump won the election. Like Barack Obama, the rump was able to fool a whole bunch of people into thinking that he was battling against the machine rather than being himself one of the most corrupted parts of the machine. He lied, in other words. The Republicans have always been on board with the imperialism machine. And then Barack Obama succeeded at pretty much single-handedly killing the anti-war movement on the left. And so now, rather than fighting the war machine, everyone is instead fighting each other on behalf of the war machine. And the talking mouths on the media machine play their role by pretending to be impartial commentators, even when the facts are all on one side. And thus, we are currently having a years-long debate about global climate change and fossil fuels' responsibility for that change, just as we had a decades-long debate about whether cigarettes cause cancer. even though the facts were hidden right in front of everyone's eyes for the entire time. And it's the same with this impeachment circus. The Rump has indeed committed a large number and a wide variety of impeachable offenses.
A twinkle in his eye, always smiling sweetly,
but I never expected to die.
And in spite of that indisputable fact, the Republicans simply deny that the Rump has committed any offenses. And so the media machine, in their pretended dedication to impartiality, simply repeat this lies as if they were credible arguments. To a large portion of the American populace, the truth has become whatever the Rump says it is. And the man is a pathological liar. Lots of people also tell lots of lies about money. And they even tell lies about games about money. So, I don't know how popular it is these days, but when I was a kid, everyone played the board game of Monopoly, which is a game about money. Kids, adults, and grandparents often spent hours together playing all day games. Even us druggy teenagers would often get totally blasted and then spend hours on a Monopoly board trying to win it all by any means necessary.
No, you can.
The story behind the game was that Monopoly had been invented at the height of the Great Depression by a destitute and out-of-work salesman named Charles Darrow, who then went from rags to riches and became America's first board game millionaire. It was a great inspirational story that helped make Monopoly so popular in the 1930s. By the 1950s, everyone had been hearing that story all of their lives. And it turns out that story was totally full of crap. It turns out, in fact, that a radical feminist and socialist activist named Lizzie Maggie invented the original game at the turn of the century. And she did it as a way to indirectly attack people such as John D. Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie without having to deal with incurring the infamous wrath of those two profanely rich and infamously wrathful men. So, Lizzie Maggie, that's M-A-G-I-E, invented her game to demonstrate the methods that capitalists and landlords used to fleece everyone else and to concentrate the wealth. She also invented an alternative form of the same game called Prosperity that was based upon more progressive rules. And where the point of the game was for everyone to help everyone else to prosper. Because when everyone prospers, then everyone prospers. So Ms. Maggie's game became popular amongst leftist elites. And at the time, her game spread up and down the East Coast and throughout the Midwest. Everyone from Quakers to college students started playing the game. Many of these people started making their own boards, and many people thus further contributed to the game's design and evolution from its inception in 1906 through the 1930s, when Parker Brothers began marketing Monopoly. Now that happenstance came about when a lady named Ruth Hoskins learned the game in Indianapolis and then took it to her home in Atlantic City, New Jersey, where she began making her own boards with street and railroad names from Atlantic City. Though Mrs. Hoskins misspelled Marvin Gardens, which is spelled M-A-R-V-E-N, as M-A-R-V-I-N. Mrs. Hoskins then taught her game to a bunch of Quakers, as well as to another friend of hers named Esther Darrow, who happened to be the wife of the aforementioned Charles Darrow. So Charles Darrow then wrote and asked the Hoskins for a set of written rules to their game, which Mrs. Hoskins thought rather strange, but she and her husband went to the trouble of writing down the rules and then sending them to Mr. Darrow. And after that, in what is an all too familiar story, Charles Darrow stole the game, lock, stock, and barrel, and sold it to Parker Brothers as his own invention. Mr. Darrow even misspelled Marvin Gardens, just as Mrs. Hoskins had done in her version of the game. And even though the Charles Darrow story was thoroughly debunked in the 1980s, Parker Brothers still stood behind their bullshite story on their website as late as 2012. And the only reason we know about all of this is because in 1983, a gentleman named Ralph Anspach, that's A-N-S-P-A-C-H, who won a trademark lawsuit in the U.S. Supreme Court. That was originally brought against him. By Parker Brothers. Parker Brothers sued Mr. Ansbach for using the word Monopoly in his own board game called Anti-Monopoly. Even though Mr. Ansbach's game bore very little resemblance to Monopoly in any way. It was Mr. Ansbach's research for his lawsuit that uncovered the true story of how the game of Monopoly came about. In addition, Mr. Ansbach became so annoyed by Parker Brothers during the course of this lawsuit that Mr. Ansbach now plans to start releasing a new game called Originalopoly, which is an exact replica of the original Monopoly game that was played by all those Quakers and socialists during the early 20th century. There are still some game boards left from the era. And unlike Anti-Monopoly, Originalopoly is actually very similar to the Parker Brothers version. But now Parker Brothers cannot sue Mr. Ansbach because they already sued Mr. Ansbach and he handed them their asses on a plate in the Supreme Court. Good on you, Ralph Ansbach. Sometimes there is justice in this world. And we're going to be back with another story featuring yet some more social justice right after a quick station break. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. Here we go again. Thanks partly to the profound effects that cultural conditioning produces upon the human psyche, there are lots of ways for influential people to manipulate public opinion. In the Ottoman Empire during the 16th century, for instance, Suleiman the Great evidently was not a big fan of veils on women. However, Suleiman had enough political acumen to understand that simply forbidding veils would likely ignite both political and religious shite storms. And so he made a move that may be indicative of why everyone always calls him Suleiman the Great. Suleiman ruled that all prostitutes must start wearing veils. And one of the effects of this ruling was that veils suddenly became far less popular amongst the elite ladies of the Ottoman Empire. And meanwhile, a couple of centuries later, over in Germany, Frederick the Great's wish was that, in addition to their traditional wheat crop, that Germans would also start growing potatoes as his people would then have two staples rather than just one, thus making them far less susceptible to famine. And therefore, evidently lacking the political acumen of Suleiman, Frederick simply ordered his farmers to start growing potatoes. Now, that would have gone over like a lead balloon if they had had balloons in the 18th century, lead or otherwise. But predictably, when simply ordered to start growing potatoes, the peasants found this to be an unacceptable government intrusion into their personal lives. And so they bitterly and even militantly resisted. Evidently, there are records from that time of people actually being executed for defending their right to not grow potatoes. The potato martyrs. As Howard Zinn noted, history does not really repeat itself, but it often does rhyme. Anyway, Frederick the Great then hit upon an idea that may be indicative of why everyone still calls him the Great, in spite of that political faux pas. Frederick thereafter forbade anyone from growing or eating potatoes except the royal family. And in addition, he very publicly and with great fanfare christened a new royal potato patch. And he expressly forbade commoners from trespassing in his royal potato patch. He even posted guards to assure that no one would steal the royal potatoes. So as Frederick evidently figured, the peasants evidently figured that anything worth guarding must be worth stealing. And so very soon thereafter, the royal potato patch was raided. Very likely as the guards were very consciously looking the other way. And soon after that, there developed a huge demand for black market potatoes. And soon after that, clandestine non-royal potato patches began springing up all over Germany. This day, Germans will leave potatoes on Frederick's grave. However, it should be noted that these same tricks of manipulation can also be used to achieve far more sinister ends than growing potatoes. many other historical figures have taken note of Frederick's example. The CIA, for instance, is currently using this exact same model to promote their drug trafficking activities. So it would seem that humanity does not only need to be wary of the temptation of forbidden fruits. Evidently, we also need to keep a close eye upon the temptation of forbidden tubers. And with that, it is time to get to work. And thus ends part one of The Thunderbolt, Why You Should Be Upset. Next comes part two, What Can Be Done About It. Across Cascadia, the masses are arising in response to
the Olympia Action Alert
for the week of February 8th through February 14th, 2020. Yes, time for this week's calendar. Our first event is later this morning, Saturday, February 8th. It's a common brunch. This will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 115 Legion Way Southwest. This event was organized by 115 Legion, and this is their message. Common brunch is a weekly space for sharing food and making friends. Every Saturday, we'll eat together, discuss current events, and talk about the possibility of building a common future. People will be bringing dishes to share. I have a website, 115legion.org, and that's the only contact information I have. So again, this is a common brunch, Saturday, February 8th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 115 Legion Way Southwest. Also on Saturday, February 8th, we have a DIY screen printing with Jesse Dotson. This will be at 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Community Print at 316 Capitol Way. This event was organized by Community Print, and this is their message. In this class, we will run through setting up very simple and low-budget textile screen printing operations, producing work with a DIY aesthetic. We will start with a demo on making screens using reclaimed picture frames, followed by degreasing and coating with emulsion. Each participant will have the opportunity to burn their own screen and then print them. Each person can come with an image under 5x7 that they feel comfortable tracing with a paint pen onto an acetate, or they can draw whatever they want in the moment. Jesse Dotson has been screen printing for about a decade and has been involved in a number of studios over the years that range from professional to academic to activist. And they want you to register, but all they do is provide a link. So I can't tell you how to do that. So hopefully you can just show up for this. So anyway, this is DIY Screen Printing with Jesse Dotson, Saturday, February 8th. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Community Print, 316 Capitol Way. Also on Saturday, February 8th, it's a volunteer orientation and training for Power to the Public. This will be from noon to 2 p.m. at the Olympia Lamplighters. That's at 211 4th Avenue East. This event was organized by Power to the Public, and this is their message. This orientation is for all volunteer opportunities. We have a special need for signature gatherers. However, we could also use artists, writers, website helpers, social media influencers, technical specialists, revolutionaries, dreamers, practical folks, farmers, union organizers, media journalists, sign holders, artful activists, organizers, and fundraisers. This campaign is tough volunteer work, but we strive for it to be fun and rewarding as well. We will make sure that all working groups have the materials and skills needed to be an effective proponent for the Thurston Public Power Initiative of 2020. So again, this is a volunteer orientation and training for Power to the Public. Saturday, February 8th, noon to 2 p.m. at the Olympia Lamplighters, 211 4th Avenue East. All right. And now we go to Monday, February 10th. It's a night out for homes. This will be from 4 to 10 p.m. at Rumors Wine Bar, which is at 203 4th Avenue East. This event was organized by Sidewalk. And this is their message. People will be joining Sidewalk at Rumors Wine Bar for a night on the town. They will be bringing their friends and family and enjoying a glass or two of fabulous wines curated for Sidewalk supporters alongside complimentary charcuterie. I don't know what that word is, but I hope I pronounced it right. Charcuterie. Anyway, at the end of the night, Rumors will donate half the profits of the night to Sidewalk and our mission to end homelessness. We hope to see everyone there. So again, this is a night out for homes, Monday, February 10th, 4 to 10 p.m. at Rumors Wine Bar, 203 4th Avenue East. Also on Monday, February 10th, we have the 7th Annual Farm Worker Tribunal. This will be from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at 415 12th Avenue Southwest. This event was organized by Community to Community Development, and this is their message. Farm workers from across Washington State will bring testimony to tribunal judges on innovative systemic change led by workers. Our recent victories include policy, climate change, pesticides, and retaliation. So again, this is the 7th Annual Farm Worker Tribunal, Monday, February 10th. 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at 415 12th Avenue Southwest. Also on Monday, February 10th, we have the Co-Sound Co-op Mixer. This will be from 6 to 10 p.m. at Le Voyeur, 404 4th Avenue East. This event was organized by Co-Sound, and this is their message. Are you a member or worker owner at a local co-op? People will be coming to check out this casual event hosted by the newly converted collectively owned Le Voyeur Cafe and Olympia's Co-Sound in downtown Olympia. People will be nomming on some garlic fries and talking co-op shop with their community. We look forward to seeing everyone there. So again, this is the Co-Sound Co-op Mixer, Monday, February 10th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at Le Voyeur, 404 4th Avenue East. Right, next we go to Tuesday, February 11th, and this is another event on the very same issue. This is a workplace organizing collective. This will be from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Power Office, 309 5th Avenue Southeast. And POWER stands for Parents Organizing for Welfare and Economic Rights. It's not like a real power office. This event was organized by the Olympia Democratic Socialists of America, and this is their message. The Workplace Organizing Collective is a group of Olympia DSA organizers and community members who meet on the second Tuesday of every month to teach one another effective, concrete organizing skills to build power at work. People who are fed up with their boss will be coming to join us. The collective is open to everyone who wants to improve the lives of their families and communities by organizing for economic justice. Drop-ins are welcome. So again, this is the Workplace Organizing Collective, Tuesday, February 11th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Power Office, 309 Fifth Avenue Southeast. Now we go to Wednesday, February 12th. It's a climate conversation, Climate 101. This will be from 6 to 8 p.m. at 601 4th Avenue East. I'm not sure what that is, but that's what it says. This event was organized by the STREAM team of Thurston County, and this is their message. People who are baffled by all the climate-related issues will be joining us and guest speaker Paul Pickett to explore the causes of global warming, impacts to our region, and ideas for solutions and adaptations. Attendance will register in advance at streamteam.info/events. streamteam.info/events. So again, this is a climate conversation, Climate 101, Wednesday, February 12th, 6 to 8 p.m. at 601 4th Avenue East. Also on Wednesday, February 12th, we have the Jacobin Reading Group. This will be from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at Orca Books, 509 4th Avenue East. This event was organized by the Olympia Democratic Socialists of America, and this is their message. Ole DSA hosts a Jacobin reading group that meets on the second Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. at Orca Books. We generally discuss three or four short articles of interest to socialists, published primarily, though not exclusively, in Jacobin. For contact, email is jacobin@oledsa.com. And the website is oledsa.org/jacobin. So again, this is the Jacobin Reading Group, Wednesday, February 12th, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at Orca Books, 509 4th Avenue East. Next, we go to Thursday, February 13th. It's a jail expansion and county courthouse Q&A. This will be from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Olympia Unitarian Universalist Congregation. They're at 2315 Division Street Northwest. This event was organized by the Olympia Unitarian Universalist Congregation, and this is their message. Ty Mincer, County Commissioner, and Patrick O'Connor, Director of Thurston County Public Defense, will discuss and answer questions about the county jail expansion and the new proposed courthouse. These are both important initiatives. The public is invited. This will be presented by Justice Not Jails. I have a website here, OUUC.org, Olympia Unitarian Universalist Congregation. So again, this is a jail expansion and county courthouse Q&A, Thursday, February 13th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Olympia Unitarian Universalist Congregation, 2315 Division Street Northwest. And finally, we come to Friday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. This is Stonewall Youth's Open Hearts, Open Mic. This will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Stonewall Youth Olympia, 112 State Avenue, Northeast. This event was organized by Stonewall Youth Olympia, and this is their message. This Valentine's Day, people will be kicking off a lovely evening with Stonewall Youth's Open Hearts, Open Mic. It's bound to be a sweet show of poems, songs, stories, jokes, and confessions of the heart. All ages and identities welcome. This event is free to youth, and we ask ages 21 plus to pay a sliding scale entrance fee of $3. Performance slots open only to LGBTQ youth ages 12 to 24. Performers get in free, refreshments provided. Guitars, bass, piano, ukulele, and drums in varying conditions will be available for performer use. Please come before 5:30 p.m. if you plan to use them. Sign-ups start at 5. The show begins at 5:30. Each performer gets a 5-minute spot to shine. Any acts containing explicit violent or sexual content or acts containing discriminatory language will not be allowed. For questions, people will be emailing info@stonewallyouth.org or phoning 360-888-4273. Again, that's 888-4273. For information on Stonewall Youth's Open Hearts Open Mic, Friday, February 14th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Stonewall Youth Olympia, 112 State Avenue Northeast. And that's it for the calendar, and that's it for this week's show. Got time for a quick FYI. I was interviewed on Kim Dobson's show, Parallel University, last Thursday, January 30th. And you can find that interview on the KAOS website for the next couple of weeks. I personally catch Parallel University nearly every week. And if you want a clear take on local Olympia issues, I suggest you do the same. Kim's show is probably the best locally produced news program in Greater Olympia, and Parallel University airs every Thursday at noon on KAOS 89.3 FM Olympia. And I got another minute here, so I'll leave you with this.
Tonight on CNN, Anderson Cooper examines a nation in turmoil with a giant panel of ill-informed dumb people talking over each other from behind an enormous gleaming glass and stainless steel horseshoe-shaped desk, while swirling graphics you can't quite read float in the background behind their yammering, gape-jawed heads. Find out what our panelists are thinking all at once as the occasional good point gets drowned out by a cacophony of paid partisan pundits.
Than you ever have in your little life.
Plus, Anderson takes us behind the scenes with a tour inside Gloria Borger's massive mouth. Anderson Cooper presents a clamor of conflicting opinions and insipid interjected analysis from a cabal of caterwauling cognoscente. Tonight at 9, following CNN Tonight with Drunk Don Lemon.
All right, that's our, that was our CNN promo.
I'm out of here now. Hope to see you next week. Peace. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And please note that the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can now go directly to the Thunderbolt WordPress site, which is at dana98501.wordpress.com.
Thank you very much.